S Corporation Taxation. In this session, we are going to cover an overview of S Corp tax, go over Form 1120S, cover a shareholder's basis in an S Corp, cover shareholder S Corp earnings, and S Corp termination. Beginning with an overview, an S corporation, or an S Corp, as I will call it from here on out, is a type of corporation that's taxed under subchapter S of the Internal Revenue Code. An eligible domestic corporation can avoid double taxation, which means it's taxed once to the corporation and then again later to the shareholders, by electing to be treated as an S Corp. The key characteristic of an S Corp is that it combines the limited liability of a traditional C Corp, but has the pass-through taxation structure of a partnership or a sole proprietorship. So what does that mean, a pass-through entity? It means that the income earned by the S-Corp is not taxed at the entity level. Instead, it's passed through to the shareholders who report their share of the S-Corp's income, losses, deductions, and credits on their individual tax returns. To qualify for S-Corp status, a corporation must meet the following requirements. It must be a domestic corporation, meaning it must be organized in the United States, no more than 100 shareholders, and the shareholders must meet the following criteria. They must be individuals, estates, or trusts, because corporations, partnerships, or non-qualified trusts cannot be shareholders. Shareholders must be U.S. citizens or residents. Non-resident aliens cannot be shareholders. And there must be one class of stock. While there can be differences in the voting rights among the shares, there can't be differences in the rights to distribution of profits or assets. And types of entities that are ineligible would be certain financial institutions, insurance companies, and domestic international sales corporations. To elect S Corp status, all shareholders must agree. It must be a unanimous election. So they must unanimously elect the S Corp, the S status. That's because in an S-Corp, the corporation's profits and losses are passed through to the shareholders and taxed at their individual tax rates, making them personally responsible for income taxes resulting from the election. To elect to be an S-Corp, you must submit a Form 2553 and it must be signed by all of the shareholders. The due date, well, to be considered an S-Corp in the current year, the due date of the election must be made either during the preceding year or by the 15th day of the third month, in other words, March 15th, for a calendar year corporation. A late election or an ineffective election will be treated as an election for the next tax year. So let's talk about the S-Corp tax year. As a general rule, an S-Corp is required to have a December 31st year-end or a fiscal year that matches the fiscal year of the shareholders who own more than 50% of the corporation's stock. Now, an exception is if a valid business purpose exists, an S-Corp may ask for an IRS approval to adopt a different fiscal year. A valid business purpose exists if, for three consecutive years, at least 25% of the S-Corp's gross receipts are received in the final 2 months of the selected fiscal year. Let's talk tax accounting basis, cash and accrual. An S-Corp can use the cash basis if average annual gross receipts are $29 million or less using 2023 tax law during the preceding 3 years. Otherwise, they have to use accrual. Now, for the formation of an S-Corp, as far as gain or loss to shareholders and a shareholder's basis in the corporation stock and the corporation's basis in the property, That is all treated exactly the same as for a C corp. And so you can go back, you can go listen to the C corp lecture over all of that fun stuff. There's really no reason to repeat it here. So you can go back and listen to the C corp lecture on that. Let's move on to an overview of Form 1120S. Like we said, an S corp is a pass-through entity. So that means the S corp itself does not pay any income tax. Instead, the income or losses of the corporation is passed through to the shareholders who report this income on their individual tax returns. And so the Form 1120S is used by the S corp to report their income, losses, dividends, deductions, and credits for a tax year. The filing deadline for a Form 1120S with the IRS is on or before 2.5 months after the close of its tax year for a calendar year, which is January to December. The return is due March 15th. If it needs an extension, it can file a Form 7004. So Form 1120S has Schedule K and Schedule K1. Schedule K is the part of the Form 1120S that summarizes the S Corp's ordinary income and separately lists all items that are not ordinary income. Because certain types of income and deductions are treated differently on an individual tax return, these are listed separately so that shareholders know how to handle them on their own returns. Non-separately stated income and separately stated income are as follows. First, you have ordinary business income, which consists of income derived from the actual conduct of business. This type of income is netted with expenses at the corporate level and then passed through to shareholders as ordinary income. Then you have separately stated items, which are reported separately on Schedule K and K1 because they may be subject to different tax treatment or limitations at the individual shareholder level as compared to the corporate level. Examples of separately stated items include interest in dividends, passive activity income, capital gains and losses, charitable contributions, Section 179 election, and tax credits. So those are your separately stated items. Then on Schedule K-1, each shareholder of the S-Corp receives a Schedule K-1, which shows their share of the corporation's income, losses, deductions, and credits for the year. Shareholders use this information to complete their individual tax returns. So let's talk about the flow of the 1120S. So you have revenues minus business expenses, giving you ordinary business income. That's the 1120S. Then on the Schedule K, and there's only one Schedule K, you have ordinary business income, interest and dividend income, rent and royalties, capital gains, subtract capital losses, subtract charitable contributions, subtract investment interest expense, subtract tax credits, then there's income reconciliation. And then those all flow through to the K-1, and it's prorated for each shareholder. And then those flow through to the Form 11, to the Form 1040 of the individual. So ordinary business income goes to Schedule E. Interest and dividend income goes to Schedule B. Rent and royalties, Schedule E. Capital gains, Schedule D. Capital losses, Schedule D. Charitable contributions, Schedule A. Investment interest expense, Schedule A. And tax credits, Form 1040. That's the flow. Allocation of income for shares held less than a year. So when a shareholder owns shares in an S-Corp for less than a year, their share of the corporation's income needs to be prorated based on the actual length of time the shares were held during the year. So you calculate the average daily income, which you take the total annual income divided by the number of days in the year, 365 days in a regular year, to find the average daily income. Then divide the average daily income by the total number of shares in the S Corp. This gives you the average daily income earned per share. And then allocate that to the shareholder. Average daily income per share times the number of days the shareholder owned the shares. Fringe benefits. Fringe benefits are additional compensation given to employees over and above the regular salary. They can include things like health insurance, company cars, meals, retirement plan contributions. Fringe benefits paid by an S corp are taxed as follows. So fringe benefits to less than 2% shareholders are deductible. Fringe benefits to more than 2% shareholders are deductible to the S corp only when included in the shareholders' W-2. So just remember that 2% threshold. Shareholders' stock basis in an S corp. Again, we already went over stock basis stuff very thoroughly in the C corp lecture, but just as a quick overview, in an S corp, stock basis refers to an individual shareholder's investment in the company. This basis is essentially the shareholder's capital account in the S corp for tax purposes. To calculate the shareholder's basis in an S corp, first add contributions and income, then subtract distributions, and then deductions and losses at last. So you have your initial basis, add additional contributions, add non-separately stated income, add separately stated income, add tax-exempt income, subtract distributions, subtract separately stated expenses, subtract non-separately stated expenses, subtract tax-exempt expense. That gives you your final basis. There's more of a detailed breakdown of that in the Ninja book. So that was basis in stock. Let's talk about basis in debt of the S corp. A shareholder's debt basis in an S corp refers to loans made by a shareholder to the S corp. Only loans made directly from the shareholder to the corporation increase debt basis. A shareholder guarantee of a third-party loan to the S corp without more does not increase the shareholder's debt basis. A shareholder can use their debt basis to absorb losses from the S corp that exceed their stock basis. However, losses are first deducted from the shareholder stock basis, and only then can they be deducted from the debt basis. Remember that: stock basis first, then debt basis. A shareholder's debt basis in S corp is calculated as follows: initial debt basis minus repayments minus separately stated expenses minus non-separately stated expense minus tax-exempt expense, final basis. A shareholder's tax basis in an S corp refers to the total of the shareholder's stock and debt basis. This is the amount that a shareholder has invested in the S corp for tax purposes and represents the maximum amount that a shareholder can deduct in losses from the S corp. So the tax basis equals stock basis plus debt basis. Then you have the at-risk basis. The at-risk amount generally includes the shareholder stock and debt basis, but does not include certain types of financing for which the shareholder is not personally reliable, such as non-recourse loans. So at-risk basis is stock basis plus debt basis minus non-recourse loans. Next, we have S-corp shareholders and their limitations on loss deductions. The ability of an S-corp shareholder to claim losses from the corporation on their individual tax return is limited to their tax basis, subject to the at-risk and passive activity loss rules. These limitations are applied in the following order. First, you have tax basis limitation, then at-risk basis, then passive activity loss limitation, and then excess business loss limitation. Next, we have S-corp earnings, beginning with the accumulated adjustment account, or AAA account. Accumulated adjustments account, or AAA, represents the cumulative total of the undistributed profits made by the S-corp. So profits of S-corps are taxed only once, so the AAA account is used to keep track of undistributed income that's already been taxed so that double taxation doesn't take place. So that's the AAA account, and so it's opening accumulated adjustments account, add non-separately stated income, add separately stated income, minus separately stated expenses, minus non-separately stated expenses, minus tax-exempt expense, minus distributions, then closing the accumulated adjustments account. Then we have accumulated earnings and profits, AEP. Accumulated earnings and profits represent the total earnings and profits that an S-corp has generated while it was a C-corp, because sometimes C-corps move to, they elect S-corp status. So for S-corps, AEP usually comes into play when a corporation has switched from C-corp to an S-corp. The profits earned by C-corps are taxed at the corporate level when earned, and then again at the shareholder level when distributed as dividends. This is often referred to as double taxation. If the C-corp later elects S-corp status, it may have accumulated earnings and profits from its years as a C-corp. These profits were taxed at the corporate level when earned. However, because these profits have not yet been distributed, they haven't yet faced the second layer of taxation that normally occurs at the shareholder level, and the distribution from the accumulated earnings and profits is subject to tax at the shareholder level when distributed as dividends. So basically, makes it so there's no loophole from a C corp getting out of double taxation by electing S status. Terminating an S corp. An S-corp status can be terminated under several circumstances, including failure to meet eligibility requirements, excessive passive investment income, or voluntary revocation by shareholders. In the case of voluntary revocation by shareholders, shareholders holding more than 50% of the corporation's shares can voluntarily terminate its S-corp status. And it's effective as follows. If the date is specified in the revocation, then the terminated is effective from the date that's specified. If it's not specified, then the date of termination is either it's effective the start of the current tax year. If it was made within the first 2.5 months, remember that 2.5 month rule for electing S, it's the same with terminating, or effective from the start of the next tax year if the revocation was made after the first 2.5 months of the tax year. So that's one way, voluntary revocation. Then there's failure to meet eligibility requirements. If an S-corp fails to meet one of the eligibility requirements, then the S-corp status is terminated as of the date the requirement was violated. This includes shareholder limit breach. Remember, you only have 100 shareholders. Non-resident alien shareholder limitation. Ineligible shareholders. So they can only be owned by individuals, certain trusts, and estates. So if they're sold to another corporation, to a C-corp, rather, multiple classes of stock. S-corps can only have one class of stock. If they issue a second class of stock, like a preferred stock, it's terminated. Or termination due to excessive passive income. If more than 25% of the S-corp's gross receipts are from passive, like rent, royalties, dividends, interest, annuities, gains, from sales or exchanges of stocks or securities for 3 consecutive years, that's 25%, and the corporation has accumulated earnings and profits from its time as a C-corp, at the end of these years, the S-corp status is terminated. If the S-corp fails the passive income test, it's terminated effective from the beginning of the fourth year. Or termination during the middle of the year. When an S-corp status is terminated during a year, the corporation's income for the year is allocated between the S-corp short year and a C-corp short year. Re-election. Once the S-corp status is terminated, the corporation generally can't re-elect S-corp status for 5 years unless the IRS consents. This concludes S Corporation Taxation.